Okay, Perakas, here we go. Vayimi, Kates, Esrim, Shana, Shabana, Shlomo's, Beit Hashem, Vesbeso. It was at the end of 20 years in which Shlomo Melech had built up the Beis HaMikdash and his house. Now again, it took 7 years to build the Beis HaMikdash. That meant that out of the other 20 years, that's 13 years to build up his own palace. That's an amazing feat of Shlomo Melech, that he hurried the building of the Beis HaMikdash to make sure it would be built as soon as possible with all the trimmings and everything out there, but it took him 13 years to build his own palace after he built the Beis HaMikdash. That's an amazing feat. Most people would think of themselves or try to make it at least equal, but not Shlomo Melech. Shlomo Melech did everything like that. The cities that Churim gave over to Shlomo Melech, Shlomo Melech built them up. Yosef Sham is Bnei Yisrael, and he put Bnei Yisrael there. He settled them there. Vayelch Shlomo Chamas Tzoyva. Shlomo then went to Chamasova Yechazak Aleha. And he went ahead and he strengthened that area right over there. By even as Tadmor Bamidbor, and he built up Tadmor in the desert. It's called Miskanos Shabana Bahamas, as well as all the storage cities that he had built in Hamas itself. Now here's the deal of what was happening over here. There's a machlokas what happened over here, where it says over here, the cities that Churim gave to Shlomo. You know, that's interesting, because in Malachim, it says there were cities that Shlomo gave to Churim, right? So what does that mean? Did he give cities to Shlomo, or did Shlomo give cities to him? Which one was it exactly? How do we understand this? The Radak and Mitsudo suggest they were mutual, separate gifts. Shlomo Melech gave certain cities to Churim, and when Churim heard about that, he said, you know what, let's give some back to Shlomo Melech, and they gave one to the other, etc., like that. Melachim Aleph is talking about Shlomo's gift, and this is talking about Churim's gift. Abarbanel and Malbim say, no, that makes no sense. Why would you separate them and put them in two different books, one in one place, one in the other place? And not only that, halakhically, you're not allowed to give land to a non-Jew for nothing. How are you allowed to give land to a non-Jew like this? How is that possible? So Abarbanel and Malbim say they were not a gift. Shlomo Melech gave these cities over to Churim not as a pure gift, but rather to cultivate them, to give them the wheat and the oil in those cities so they could pay themselves back for what they did. Remember, Shlomo Melech promised them tons and tons of food. He gave them cities where he said, all the wheat and all the oil of these fields are yours until I pay you back for everything that you are supposed to get for all the work that you did for me. Those 20 cities, therefore, remained part of Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, we're probably still chayiv in Trumos and Maestros and Shemitah and everything like that. But they were given over to Churim so that he would be able to have something to be able to have over here. That's an obvious idea behind it over there. It's possible that Churim even rejected the gift. And he said to Shlomo Melech, I appreciate it, but I'm not going to take it. It's possible that Shlomo Melech was offering it, but he never ended up taking any other thing. Now, this acquiring of Hamas Tzova is possibly the only military acquisition that Shlomo Melech ever did. We're not sure if it was a war and a battle that he did, or it's just that he just did this and took over the area, right? So that's that. That's the idea of that. Even as Tadmor. So he built up Tadmor over here and all the Ari Miskanos. But even as Beis Chorona Elyon, he built up upper Beis Chorona, as Beis Chorona Tachton in that area as well. Ari Matzor, siege cities, right? Big cities. Chomos Zolosayim Ovriach, with walls and with what's it called as well, right, and locks. These were very poor cities that Shlomo Melech was trying to build up. Even the poorest of cities that they had in Eretz Yisrael, Shlomo made sure that everything was going to be done in such a good way so that no one would have to worry about any enemies wherever they were. Vesba alas, and I think that makes sense, considering how rich these cities were, it made sense that Shlomo Melech had to fortify them now because enemies would be around. As Baalas, as Korei Miskanos Shariyul Shlomo, and Baalas, as well as all the storage cities of Shlomo Melech, as Korei Rechev, as well as all the chariot cities, as Arya Parashim, where all the cavalry were, as Kol Cheshek Shlomo, and all the different, I guess, desires that Shlomo Melech had, Shahil, the Asher Choshak, Livnos, Birushalayim, Bavavanon, Vacholar, Zman, Shalto, everybody, there were anything that he wanted to make wherever he went. All the people that remained from those people, the Chiti, the Mori, Prizi, Chivi, and Yevusi, that were not Jews, their children that still remained, but Eretz Yisrael, the Bnei Yisrael did not destroy them. Shlomo made sure they paid an extra tax. He said to them, basically, get out of the land. And if you don't want to get out of the land, because you were supposed to get out years and years and years ago, you don't want to get out of the land, that's fine. You have to pay a double tax, you know, in order to sort of like kick them out completely. And those that Bnei Yisrael did not enslave among Bnei Yisrael, right, for slaves, for his work, they became commanders, they became officers, they became people in charge of his chariots and whatever it is. So everybody had something to do in Shlomo Melech's army. It was almost like I don't want to say it, but like almost like a perfect communist system where everybody had a job to do and everybody got to do something. These are the officers of those commanders. There were 250 men who directed the people, who did everything they were supposed to do when it comes down to it. Now in Melachim, it's 550. It could be over there, they're talking about certain overseers, and these are the people who actually did the work. It could be it's something a little bit different, but that's the idea. That's Bas Paro. Hello, Shlomo Ir David. Bas Paro, Shlomo brought up from Ir David Labayis Shabbalah to the house that he had built for. Kiyama Lo Seshev Isha Li. I don't want a wife to be in the area near David Melech Yisrael, because that area, Ki Kodeshema, that area was Kodeshema, because the Aron of Hashem came there. He may have held that it was usher to be together with one's wife in that area, to be a Balkari in that area, so therefore he took her out. And then he brought more olos to HaKadosh Baruch on the Mizbeach of Hashem that he built in front of the Ulam, in front of the hall. Right, so he brought every single day, right, every single day, to bring up, like the command of Moshe Rabbeinu. There were Shabbosos, there were Rosh Chodesh offerings, there were Moed offerings, three times a year, B'chag V'tachav Shavuos, B'chag Sukkos. The Yamid K'mishpat David Aviv, and he did it, right, he set it up according to the Mishpat of David, his father's Machlokos Kohanim, all the divisions of the Kohanim, Alavodasim, for the Ravod of Alavim, and Mishmeroisim, and the Levim, and their Mishmor, Lahalo, Lasharis, Negat Kohanim, Levar Yom Biomo, to sing and to do service, right, opposite the Kohanim, every single day, whatever they need to do that. Deva Shoarim, Machlokosim, Lashar, Vashar, all the gatekeepers according to their divisions in every single gatekeeper. It says, David, Elu, Isha, Elokim, this was the command of David, man of God. Volsarim, it says, Melech, Alakohanim, Alavim, Lachol, Dover, Ulachol, Aratzais, Ula, Otsaros, I'm sorry. They did not turn away from the king's command regarding the Kohanim Levim, regarding everything as well as the treasure house, and they did whatever David HaMelech had decided. And all of the Malach of Shalom HaMelech until today, we was set up Musad in the house of Hashem HaKloso until it was finished. Shalom, full, Beis Hashem. Oz Halach Shlomo Etzion Gaver. Then Shlomo HaMelech went to Etzion Gaver. Val Elot, as well as, this is also known as Eilat, Al Sasiyam, right on the bank of the sea itself, Be'eretz Edom, all the way down to the land of Edom. Now Edom, this is the original Eilat. This is not the Eilat that's mentioned in Gittin, right, but it is referring to the actual Eilat that we have today, right by, well, it's not in the, you know, the Sasiyam, Be'eretz Edom, it's not the Red Sea, but it's really the Gulf of Aqaba. That's where, you know, where it is. Also, Shlomo Letz and Gavril Elot, so he went there. Yishlach lo Churam biyad avadav anios. Churam sent in the hands of his servants certain ships, vavadam yodeyam, as well as servants who knew the sea really well. Remember, Churam lived all the way up by Lebanon, right on the sea itself. So it made sense that he knew ships very, very well. He sent them down to Eilat, right? And he did those people right over there. Vavadam yodeyam. I'm sorry?
Does it go that way?
Which one?
If you're in Lebanon...
There's no way. It would have to be overland. I mean, in theory, yes, you could surround the Cape... Well, what's it called? The Cape of Africa, right? South Africa, etc. You can go around, but that would take way too long. Not with those ships back then. So they probably either had rivers, little tributaries that they brought there. Okay. Maybe there was a river that led to the Kinneret, and then the Kinneret led down to you know, the what's called Jordan River, and then Jordan River to that Dead Sea, and then it wasn't, you know, not like a hop, skip, and jump, but you could get down to the, you know, the Red Sea. I don't know how else they would have gotten there. There was no, obviously, Suez Canal that went down to the Gulf of Aqaba, so I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not positive. But either way, regardless, it says, he went to Atonga, so whatever. Vayaboim avdei Shlomo Ophir, and they came with the servants of Shlomo to the area called Ophir. They took from there 450 kikar of gold, right, by a view, and they brought it over Al-Malch Shlomo to the King Shlomo itself. Now, this is an extremely, extremely huge amount itself. Now, it does mention 450 talents here, 420 in Malachim. It could be that 30 talents of gold was needed to finance all of these trips. That's how much they spent over there. But the amount of money is absolutely crazy, because a talent, if I remember correctly, is altogether 3,000 shekel. Okay? 3,000 shekel. Shekel is a weight. Certain amount, and I forget exactly how much a shekel is in today's weight. I remember doing this cheshbon once, and it came out to be something like 800 something million dollars if you do an ounce of gold versus how much it was, and that's how much it was in today's dollars, meaning regarding what it was back then, I have absolutely no idea. But the concept is of where this is supposed to be. Now, where is this place exactly? Some say this is on the east coast of Africa, right? The East Coast of Africa is where they had all this gold. Others say it was around Yemen. I had no idea that Yemen was known for its gold. I had absolutely no idea, right? But maybe Yemen, because it was near India, maybe India had a lot of gold. That's a definite possibility over there. Rabbi Yisroel Belsky, based on ancient stone inscriptions, says that it was Peru. Now, the possibility of it being Peru is so far remote from possible. I just don't understand it. Number one, they were making the ships in a lot, right? Why would they have made them in a lot? You would rather bring it to the Mediterranean Sea because that would be the quickest way to go out and down. If you were to go down like that and around the Cape and then eventually South America, that is an extremely long trip. Right, an extremely long trip, seemingly for nothing. So if you're going down there to Eilat, the most likely thing is that you're either going to India or the tip of Saudi Arabia or Africa. And there was tons of gold in Africa. So to me, the most likely thing is over there. Now, I get it. It could be that there's inscriptions that say it that way. It just seems extremely unnecessary and very, very strange. All right, that's the end of Perek Ches. Perek Ches. Malkus Shva, Shoma, Shema, Shloma. The Queen of Sheba. Now, we don't know if this is Malkus Shva, as this is a kingdom called Shva, or if this is an actual queen named Shva, or it's the queen of the land called Sheba. We have no clue whatsoever. Shoma Shema Shlomo, she heard the fame of Shlomo. Melech HaTovel announced that Shlomo, she came to test Solomon the king, Bechidos, with riddles. Yerushalayim, she came to Yerushalayim, Bechayo Kaved Ma'od, with a huge entourage, a huge army, Gamalim Nosim, Besamim Vizov, Laroiv. She brought a lot of camels that were carrying a lot of besamim and gold, so much stuff. The Evan Yekar, as well as precious stones. Now, Tavol al Shlomo, she came over to Shlomo Melech, Tadaber Imos, Kolosher Hayim Levava. She told over Shlomo Melech everything that was in her heart. She told him over everything that was going on with her. And she had all this stuff. Now, she brought everything with her. What she wanted to say is either she was doing actual riddles, right? Real riddles itself, right? Or a perplexing moral dilemma. She had an issue, and she wanted to see what it could be. So it could be she was testing him and giving like a riddle after riddle, and Shlomo Melech was getting everything and everything like that. But it's more likely that he was telling, she had problems, issues, and he was trying to answer all of those issues over here. Now, where was Sheba? According to Abarbanel, likelihood is it's right by Ophir. Wherever Ophir is, that's where Sheba was. And that's where this person came from as well. That's the idea behind it right over here. It's possible that Abarbanel also says that this was Yemen. Miamloi says it may have been Ethiopia. Right? Some of those areas. Both of those make a lot of sense. I think it's perfectly fine over here. Ramosha Eisman asks, who cares? Like, was she the only person who came to Shlomo Melech with issues? Like, no other kings came to him with all these types of things and stuff like that? So the idea is that this became the prototype to times of Mashiach, the Yemos Mashiach. Yemos Mashiach, everybody will present their issues in front of Mashiach himself, and they'll bring it in front of him. So she was the first to do this, to show that this is almost like a prototype of what was going to be in the times of Mashiach itself, her bringing all of her stuff over to Shlomo Melech and bringing presents and everything like that, etc. Okay, so it says like this. It says, Vayagid lo Shlomo is called out. Shlomo Melech told her everything she was thinking. Nothing was hidden from Shlomo Melech Shalei Gila that he wasn't able to tell to her. In other words, he was able to figure out not only what she was asking, but what was behind the questions of what she was asking, which is even more impressive. I see what you're asking and why you're saying it, and here's why it's so. And that's what she would tell him, which is absolutely amazing. The Queen of Sheba saw the wisdom of Solomon, as well as the house that he had built. Apparently there was architecture, certain things that she had never seen before. The food at his table, which might have been very healthy and normal, the Ralbag says that it was according to diet. Everything was arranged according to health value, right? That's how it was over there. They probably looked at the side of the box and they saw how many nutrients were on the side, you know? That's what I do nowadays, obviously. Right? The Baramosha also said there was lavishness, but there was a certain amount of kedusha that was added to these meals as well. It did not feel like a feast. It felt like a nice meal where everybody was able to eat what they wanted to eat and the right things, etc. Umaymin Mishorsav, and the way that his servants stood, Umabushem is their clothing, Umashkov Umabushem, as well as his drinkers and their uniforms, Aliyasu Asher Yala Beis Hashem, and the way he went up to the Beis HaMikdash, Loyola Od Bo Ruach, and she didn't have any wind. She couldn't even speak. She's like, she was so shocked. Right, she said to the king, true is the word that I had heard in my land about your words and about your wisdom. At the time, I never believed their words, right? Obviously, Right? She's obviously, she's looking at it. She's like, I never believed what they were saying. I heard what you were able to say. I heard what you're able to think. And normally people are like, it's one of the two. Either people can figure out people really quickly. They're not so smart, but they can figure out what another person's saying. Or they're really, really smart, so they're attuned with what the person wants to say. You're both. You're able to speak and you have the wisdom over here. You're philosophical as well as theoretical. You're able to do things over here as well. You're superior in that way. Till I came back to Renei Nai, my eyes saw. They haven't told me half of the majority of your wisdom, of your immense wisdom. It's added on. Right, everything that I have heard. Ashrei anashecha, happy are your people. Ashrei avadecha and your servants. Elu omdim lefenecha, that stand in front of you. Tell me, v'shomim yischach masecha, that are able to hear your wisdom. Yashem elokecha, Baruch, your God, Hashem should be blessed. Hashachavis b'chad, that is chosen. Nilsitcha alkisu lemelech, that allowed you to be on His throne for a king. Hashem elokecha, ba'avas alokecha Yisrael, because Hashem loves Bnei Yisrael. La'amidu lo'ilam, He wants him to stand forever. V'yitenka aleihem lemelech, and He will make He made you as a king. Lasos mishbar tzedaka, to do mishbar tzedaka. V'atitin lemelech me'ave asrim kikar zav, she gave him 120 kikar of gold, some of the rov ma'od, tremendous amounts of some of the ebony yakar, as well as precious stones. There never was such a large quantity of spices that Malchus Shva gave over to the king Shlomo. The servants of Churam and the servants of Shlomo that brought gold from Ophir, you know what they also brought? They brought coral. Coral is not an easy thing to bring about when it comes to stuff like this, but they brought coral, the ebony yakar, and precious stones, probably pearls, from the sea. Remember, they were also sailors. Vayasa melech hazatzia algumim misilos l'beis Hashem. He made them into pathways for the base of Mitzvah. Can you imagine coral floors leading up to the base of Mitzvah? L'beis melech v'chinoros v'nevelim l'sharon. Even today, by the way, coral jewelry is extremely expensive. The good stuff,
wouldn't
you know?
Wouldn't that give you an idea of where she's actually from, if they have coral?
Coral? No, because the Mediterranean Sea at the time was filled with coral. We've lost it all because they, you know, they till extinction, right? But it would have been around there. There are tons of coral reefs around Yemen that are, again, destroyed by all the people that are out there and everything like that. Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, I hope to. Should have another two. And yeah, hopefully, yes. Can you see next door, Jeff? There might be people next door. But Bahem, it says, so it says, Mesilos, they had that, and they went ahead and they took these lyres and harps for the singers. Not such things had never been seen in the land of Judah before. They'd never seen such things. So the King Shlomo gave to the Queen of Sheba all that she desired, everything she asked for. Right, aside from what she brought to the king, and then she went back to her land. Right, it could be that she converted, could be she didn't convert. We have absolutely no idea. There are famous lines and midrashim over here that he married the queen of Sheba. The queen of Sheba and Shlomo Melech had a child. The child's name was Nebuchadnezzar. Right, very, very famous midrashim about who the great children of whatever it is. Obviously, it makes Nebuchadnezzar about 400 years old, right, when he ended up conquering Yerushalayim. But I don't think that's the point. The point is that because Shlomo spent so much time on a non-Jew, and it didn't work, right? It didn't work. She might have gone back and did absolutely nothing. It shows that he had lost the ability to really affect these different people, and that was the problem over here. It says, the amount of gold that Shlomo brought in 1 year, 666 kikar of gold. It seems like this. It's 120 that he got from Hiram, 120 that he got from the Queen of Sheba, 420 from the expedition of Ophir. So 420 plus 120 plus 120 is altogether 660. Where the extra 6 came from, who knows? Aside from what the shipmen and the peddlers brought, right, the Chomalchei Arab, as well as all the kings of the Arabs, as well as the officers of the land, they brought gold and silver to Shlomo. They brought to the king Shlomo 200 shields, Zav Shachut, of beaten gold. Zav Shachut was supposed to be stringy gold that was so pliable and flexible, it was able to go through. Now, obviously, you don't make shields out of that. If they're pliable and flexible, that's probably going to make a horrible shield. But the point is, the more gold you have and the thicker it is, right, it was able to bounce things off it. That's how it was able to be used. And also, it could be bent to where you could move it like this and like have it go around. Maybe that's the idea. 600 gold pieces were used for one shield. Zav Shechut, they had 300 bucklers, right? Those are like the Mugganes, the spears, I guess. Zav Shechut, right? That's what they had. Wait, the Muggan was something different. It usually is a shield. What does he say down in the bottom over here? What is it? Maginim. Oh, they protect only one side. I guess there are things that go on the side of your body or something like that. Okay, they made that. Zav Shechut, Shlosh Meil Zahav, 300 gold pieces. Yalla la Magin Achas. Vayitneim HaMelech Beveis Yar Levanon. And he put them in the Yar Levanon, meaning they weren't even necessary. He just put them in the middle of nowhere because he didn't need them anymore. Vayasam al Kisei Shein Gadol. He made a huge throne made of marble. Vizapel Zav Tor. And he covered it up with gold. Vashesh Malos Lakisei. There were six steps upon the throne. Right? Vekeves Bazov Lakisei Ma'achazim. And there was a ramp, a kevesh, a ramp made of gold to the throne, right, that was attached all together. The Yados Mizeo Mized, there were arms on either side. Amakom HaShav was in the place where they sat. Ushnaim Arayos Omdim Etzal Yados. And there were two lions that stood next to the arms. Ushnaim Arayos Omdim Shamal Shei Shamalos. There were 12 lions standing on the six steps. Mizeo Mized from all sides. Nothing had ever been made like this for the entire kingdom itself. They say that this 12 lions that were lining up were obviously 12... each one for the 12 Shvatim. That's the idea why they were over there. The two lines over there was for Torah Shebichsav and Torah Sheba'al Peh. They represented Torah Shebichsav and Torah Sheba'al Peh to show that everything he did was based on what they had told him and all everything like that. That was the idea of what they were supposed to be. They were supposed to represent as well the fear that one should have when going in front of the king as if he's talking to a bunch of lions. The lions were there. Apparently, many of these lions were mechanical. And they would move and roar and do other things, right, that they were able to do. Could be it was done through magic. Could be it was done through Kabbalah. Could be it was just mechanical. And they, like, I had a guy twisting everything and going, like, roaring, etc. The whole clay, Mashkei HaMelech Shlomo Zahav. All the kelim, all the utensils that they used for drinking in Shlomo Melech's palace was made of gold. The whole clay, Beis Yara, Alavon, Zahav, Sagur. It was made of a good type of gold over there. Ein Kesef. There was no silver. Nechshav, Bimei Shlomo Lemuma. There wasn't considered anything at all. It's interesting because in the times later on, right, by what's it called, by Malachim, it says that the silver was worth something, was worth a certain amount. And the answer is, it was worth nothing before he married King Shlomo, before he married Bas Paro, I'm sorry. After he married Bas Paro, it was worth something. And the shot is, it could be, right, that the reason why is because once he married the daughter of Shlomo, he was into physicality. Till that point, he was into Ruchnius. So silver didn't mean anything in his time. But once he married Bas Paro and he got into physicality, that's when silver was worth something. Even if it wasn't worth much, it was at least worth something. So it says right over there, all the ships of the king, they went to the land of Tarshish, and they went once every 3 years, Tavona, Anios, Tarshish, noses of, because they carried all the gold and the silver, Shinhabim, as well as ivory, the Kofim, Etukiyim, as well as monkeys and peacocks. There is no reason to have ivory, monkeys, and peacocks. All that did was kill tons of elephants and rhinos. That's all it does. So what's the reason why you have it? Because it looks nice, and it looks awesome. And for that, now we take Shlomo Melech apart. Now you're into the physicality, into the gashmias. You want peacocks and monkeys floating around your kingdom? That's what you want over here? That's not cool. That's not what we're making this for. You want to do it for a Kaddish Baruch, you don't waste money. This is a total waste of money. He grew the king Shlomo in front of, from all the kings of the land, and his riches and his wisdom, they all wanted to see the face of the king, to hear his wisdom, that Hashem put in his heart. Each guy brought a gift, silver, gold, you know, different types of clothing, neshek, weapons, besamim, spices, susim, wapradim, horses, and mules, dvar shana b'shana, every single year. There was entertainment, there was more things, there was decadence that was starting to grow in each place over here. By the way, Tarshish, where is Tarshish? So once again, we have a problem. Targum says Tarshish is in Africa, Barbanel says it's Carthage, Tunisia, that's a far away area, all the way in Tunisia.
Like Spain.
Oh, very good. Malbim identifies it as Tartessus in Spain. Right, that's the area in Spain. That's what the Malbim says. Right, so that's what they did. Vayilu Shlomo arbas alafim urios susim omar kavos. He had 4,000 different what's it called, stables for the horses themselves. In Malachim Aleph, it says 40,000. They say either 40,000 of 4,000 each, or 4,000 of 40,000 horses each. Whichever one it was, they were either huge stables or many stables which weren't that big. Either way, regardless. I might be overshooting it. It might be that it's 4,000 stables with 10 horses each. That might be more correct, and therefore it was 40,000 horses. Yeah, that might be a little bit. Because over there it says 40,000. Over here it says 4,000. Oh. Could be it's 40,000 horses, 4,000 stables of 10 horses each. Yeah, that might be it. Okay, that's that. There were 12,000 of these chariots over there, the riders, and they put them in the cities of the chariots. You ruled over all the kings, from the river all the way to the land of the Pelishim, all the way to the borders of Mitzrayim. Truth is, that's not that far. He ruled over a lot of places, but it's not that big. It's like Mesopotamia, right, and a little bit down south. It's not like he ruled over Africa, right? So some say that this is when he was already starting to go down, right? This is when he started to go down, and things weren't as good as it was before. That was the idea behind it. Now, Shlomo was not allowed to have too many horses. In fact, this is a pasuk straight out in the Torah. You're not allowed to have too many horses. Why did he do this? Simply put, the answer is as a deterrent. The more horses you have, the more people won't want to fight you. If they don't want to fight you, then you don't have to worry about things happening over here. He may have been at peace, but the reason why he may have been at peace, says the Abarbanel, is because he had so many horses, nobody wanted to fight him. That very well could be the reason why you didn't have to worry about anything whatsoever. Now, also, the reason why you're not allowed to have too many horses is because you're going to go down to Egypt. So he said, I'm not going to go down to Egypt, but it didn't happen that way. He definitely went down to Egypt to get more horses, and it's not only him, it was the people that went down there as well. You can never assume that you're going to be able to keep the laws of the Torah unless you have everything straight up the way it's supposed to be. Now he put silver all over like stones. Remember we said up above, right, that the silver wasn't worth anything whatsoever. This is because after this point, he had already married Paro's daughter and therefore was at least like stones itself. He indulged. He got involved in the physicality that was out there, whatever it is. Some say that it means that he took silver and he used it as streets, meaning they had to make streets out of something. So instead of making it out of cement or pavement, they made it out of silver. The streets were paved with silver. The cedar wood, they made like sycamores all over the lowland. They would export horses from Egypt, from all the different lands. And all the other words of Shlomo, the first ones and last ones, they were written by the words of Nasan Navi on the voice of Achia Shaloni and the Nevua of Achia Shaloni, Yedo Hachoyze, Ayurav Menavot. And what Yedo wrote, this might be Edo, right, regarding Yerav Menavot. Now, we have lost every single one of those farm. We do not have a safer of Achia Shaloni, of Nasan Navi, or Edo Achoze. It could be that Nasan Navi Sefer is referring to Malachim. There are those that say that Nasan Navi and Gad Achoze wrote part of Malachim Aleph and Beis, and therefore that would make a lot of sense that they were involved right over here. However, we don't know if there's another Sefer that they had. We don't have it. It obviously did not make it into our 24th Sarim. He ruled over Ben Yisrael for 40 years. He was buried near David Aviv. And his son, Rechavam, ended up becoming king after him. That was what was going to happen. Obviously, all these things are going to be good. It seems like everything stopped. It seems like he had lost a lot. Now, it's not going to talk about the Divrei Yom, because Divrei Yom is only the good stuff that happened in the world, right? We're not going to talk about all that stuff. But unfortunately, it seems like Shlomo Melech lost a lot toward the end of his kingdom, and that's where the whole story with him and Ashmedai, king of the demons, comes in, where he became Kohelis, and he ran away from Yerushalayim, or was thrown away from Yerushalayim, eventually had to find his way back. This is when Shlomo lost everything. We don't talk about that, because obviously it's not a praise of David HaMelech in the kingdom, which is what Divrei Yom is all about. But unfortunately, he did lose quite a bit when he started worshipping the idols or allowing his wives to worship the idols of all the people around them. That was the downfall of Shlomo HaMelech and everything about him. We'll stop right there.